for Congress and who are also on the election boards?
Yes. All on our website. And you and we started the website shortly after the 2020 insurrection, both to profile who the groups and players and funders were and politicians were behind what happened in 2020 and 2021, but also to start laying the groundwork for the understanding that that was a practice run and they're going to try this again. So yes, there are hundreds of profiles on there of all the key actors, and there's a section on these swing states and who the election deniers are in the key positions.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Arn. Thanks for giving, you know, helping sound the alarm on this.
Great. Thank you very much.
My guest has been Arn H. Pearson, Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy. InsurrectionExposed.org is that website again. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give. When you contribute now until September 21st, your donations will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $11,000, thanks to listeners like you. Double the impact and double the fun.
We want you to join us Saturday, September 28th, from 2 to 5 p.m. for a special live broadcast during the Compassionate Living Festival, which runs from noon to 6 p.m. at Norse Hall in Portland. Tune in for our coverage featuring keynote speaker Erin Wing, an undercover investigator sharing her experiences with animals raised for slaughter. We'll also have panel discussions with experts on the benefits of a plant-based diet for people, animals, and the planet. That's September 28th, 2 to 5 p.m., live on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Running on Air is a daily radio talk roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. In this episode, we're talking with a candidate for mayor. We want you to join the conversation. You can call the air room with questions for candidates at 503-231-8187. You can message a question on the website, kboo.fm, and you can also email us your questions at runningonair@kboo.org. So let's meet the candidate for today. I don't want to mess up your name, so I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
Good evening, Portland. This is Leave Ostis.
Cool. And so you're running for mayor.
Indeed, I am.
Cool. So we actually have like a list of questions that were compiled from listeners and some that we created ourselves. So I'll just jump right into it.
Sounds great.
So what do you think is an issue facing Portland that is not getting enough attention right now?
I guess the first and foremost on my mind would be the CEI hub that is an imminent threat to us all for generations. If oil spills into the Willamette in even a minor earthquake, we're all pretty screwed. So we need attention on that, and we need to get federal, state, local funding and attention just to make sure that can be moved, that can be stabilized to prevent an imminent catastrophe. That's urgent.
This being a mayoral candidate, I think it'd be actually pretty helpful if maybe you give a rundown of your background, and so listeners can understand where you're coming from why you are running.
Sure. So my name is Liev Ostis. I'm also known as Viva Las Vegas in the community. I have been a Portland resident for 28 years. I moved here after college to play music, and I've been in many rock and roll, country, classical bands. I've been on KBOO a handful of times. It's great to be back here. I'm a writer. I'm a single mom. I am an actor, and I'm a stripper. And most people start with that because they seem to find that very fascinating. I love stripping. I think stripping is art, and I also think it is time for Portland to have a stripper mayor. What strippers do is fill darkness with light, and I see Portland being at a kind of a dark juncture, and I see that people who bear light carry light, leading us forward.
That dark juncture actually kind of helps lead into this next question. So there's a lot of negativity about Portland and what's going on here. What do you think that Portland is actually doing really well right now? And how would you continue that as mayor, or how do you see yourself fitting into that situation?
Yeah, for sure. Portland is still Portlanding very well. I mean, downtown is suffering for sure, but if you go to many of our neighborhoods, they're still thrumming with activity. Portland has, I think, 70% of our businesses are small businesses. They're doing great. We still have a bunch of people visiting from around the world to enjoy our wonderful food scene, our beautiful nature, our noted compassion, and we think outside the box when politically and left-leaning. I think we're doing so much right. And it's one reason I jumped into the race, honestly, is because I didn't hear that from the other candidates. I think our next mayor really does need to be a champion for Portland. They'll no longer be tasked with the bureaus or with legislating. We can have a mayor who represents the very best of Portland and broadcasts that to the nation and the world.
Nice. You already spoke about the oil situation, but what is the single most crucial issue, in your opinion, that absolutely must be dealt with in the next 10 years for Portland?
Well, that would be first, indeed. I mean, without Mother Earth, we're all houseless. And yes, houselessness is first and foremost on many people's minds, and addiction and mental health issues. Those are really big picture, national, it's happening in every city, every state. It's kind of part of a broken system. So for Portland to think it's going to solve it, it's not. If anyone can do it, I believe Portland can, and we need to think about best ways to do that, to protect our communities and to make sure that everyone's human dignity is honored. But I do maintain that our environment is first and foremost on, even before houselessness, on many voters' minds, especially young voters.
Nice. So this next question is literally homelessness and drug addiction seem to be two of the biggest issues Portland's facing right now. What would you do as mayor to address them?
So yeah, those are our twinned crises, because we know houselessness often leads to debilitating mental health issues. We have a lot of data from other cities like Boston and Denver that are doing things better than we are. What I see in those examples is a coordination from the state down. Oregon has houseless crises in Roseburg, in Coos Bay, in Astoria. It's not just Portland. And we have many nonprofits working very hard, doing amazing work. But if all of these resources were coordinated from the top down, including the healthcare and the mental health care components, that we could spend fewer dollars and get better results. We have to remember, at the end of the day, it's a person who has to navigate this system. And if they're being bounced around from nonprofit to nonprofit, and there's not a through path for that person who is maybe not very healthy right now, that's going to be an extra struggle for them, and the results are going to be not great. So I want coordination, federal monies, state monies, coordination from the top down.
Nice. Okay, so you don't have any experience in elected office, correct?
Correct.
What specific steps are you taking now in your candidacy to make sure that you are actually effective in office when and if you win?
Great question. Yeah, so I am adept at building teams. You know, like when you have a rock band, you build a team. When you make a movie, you build a team. I have come this far, 6 months, we've run an amazing campaign with a very small team of brilliant people. I would say like the mayor is going to have an enlightened team around them. That's really important. I also do think that 28 years on stage as a stripper very much qualifies me for this particular role as mayor. The mayor should be somebody who listens to everyone, connects with everyone, and inspires everyone. And that is exactly what strippers do. And we, I mean, as long as you're over 21, it doesn't matter your color, your race, what you believe politically, we are there to connect with you and listen to your concerns and then send you on your way feeling better about things. That's what I want in a mayor. So I do think I have very pertinent experience, including I have run, you know, I have my own small press. I'm a homeowner. I own a duplex, a landlord for, almost 20 years. So I do have experience running kind of quote unquote small businesses, but I think the stage component is something you don't see in the other mayoral candidates. And I do think it's pertinent for this new role.
Nice. Thank you. Okay, so the KBOO News Department surveyed our listeners, mm-hmm. and one of the things that you've been talking on about is the climate change and the oil situation, but that's more needing to be addressed now and in the future, but can you maybe describe, like, the impact climate change is having right now in Portland that you're seeing and, like, how that can be addressed?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, so my child was born in 2015, and I think since then we've just seen heat crises, cold storms, ice storms that broke so many trees, the smoke. It has been a very different Portland since 2015, and every neighborhood is affected by it. So for starters, every neighborhood needs a resource center that is known by all parties. We need to know who our neighbors are, which neighbors will need assistance to get to that center where they can access heating or cooling, water, food. And I'm a preacher's daughter, so I look around, I see all these churches that kind of has been their mission historically, and a lot of them are sitting empty. And I think, well, here's a natural place for communities to gather again. And so that's just one idea. I'm spitballing here, but like, can we investigate making churches that are existent into neighborhood resource centers in times of crises? Because we know that it's not if, it's when, and they're coming quicker and faster.
Nice. So that goes right into the next question, like, what concrete steps can Portland and you as mayor, if you're elected, take to mitigate some of these climate change issues that are like impacting Portland?
Yeah, I mean, mitigation, that's great. Let's talk about that instead of just responding to when it happens. What can we do to prevent things? Obviously, things like shade equity. East Portland doesn't have much tree canopy, and that means it's 10 degrees often hotter than other neighborhoods. So trees, we need to put in more trees immediately. Make sure that heating and cooling units are available for low-income people. And I really like, get the word out, get to know your neighbors. What if your neighbor has mobility issues or is elderly or has three kids and is a single mom? So remember that we're a community, and that we're that's the beauty of community. It feels good to help each other and get to know who your neighbors are now. I'll never forget my neighbor going to get me milk when my daughter was very young and we, you know, our streets were shut down by the snow.
So real quick, like, this is Portland's going into like a new structure of government. The mayor's not as impacted as much, but we're having to see like a whole bunch of candidates coming forward for the different districts. What do you think about the new system of government that Portland will be adopting?
I'm super excited about it. It's one reason I'm running, because it's so inspiring to me that I actually left the comfort of my home to run. I'm so excited that East Portland and North Portland will finally have more of a voice at the table. It seems more equitable in many ways. I have been campaigning alongside the 80 city council candidates, and that's been a great joy to me, just to see their passion and their knowledge. And they're very collaborative. They're sharing resources. They're sharing ideas, because they know that even if they're not elected, they live in a district, and they want their district to have these ideas that they've come up with. So I'm really proud of Portland for voting in this new change. It's maybe going to be an awkward transition, but maybe not. I mean, we have some really bright people coming in, and it will be interesting to see how they collaborate when they get there. And then they're going to have to work with the new mayor and, you know, of course, the county, the DA, all those parts. But I'm excited.
Yeah. And I think we're actually somewhere in there over 100 candidates, if I'm correct.
Is that for mayor and council, or is that just for council?
Spread out across.
It's kind of crazy. Kudos to you guys for trying to, you know, give us all some time behind the mic.
So, okay, real quick, folks at home, you're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Ilya. Today, we're speaking with the candidate for mayor. I have here with me Liv Ostas.
Very good. Yeah, Ostas, East House. But yeah, you got it.
Join the conversation by calling in your question to the air room at 503-231-8187 or by messaging us on KBOO's website, kboo.fm. Okay, so another big issue that KBOO listeners identified as part of our survey was economic livability and affordability.
Yes.
So what role do you think the mayor should and can have in fixing these problems?
Well, I see the new mayor role as kind of a bully pulpit to really reflect the best of Portland and the issues, listen to what people are clamoring for, and definitely the cost of living needs a bright light shone on it. The West Coast has a problem in general with the cost of living, and Portlanders, our salaries aren't commensurate with cost of living. I see so many of my artist friends get pushed out, and I'm tired of it. It's hard to get the band together when half the band's in Spokane. So just to speak to those issues and then think innovatively, think outside the box. Like, what could really affect downtown, in my opinion, is if we re-inhabit some of these empty buildings, rehab them so that they are living spaces, practice spaces, studio spaces. We need housing at, you know, lower income, middle income, no income, and just admit that and work tirelessly, because everyone needs shelter in order to thrive and be in community.
You spoke briefly on like North Portland and East Portland. Like, what kind of like lack of infrastructure or lack of services are being seen in those areas compared to like closer to downtown Portland, West Hills? What kind of like resources, aside from resource centers for like health?
For sure. Well, just off the top of my head, like grocery stores. I think East Portland especially is kind of a food desert. And there's real interesting programs in Wisconsin that I've read about where they connect farms with low-income communities. We need grocery centers. Those are a hub of energy, a hub of community. So East Portland would really benefit from that. Centers for youth. A lot of our youth aren't thought about. They don't vote. They don't have a lot of financial power, and we just neglect them completely and then wonder why they're, you know, spinning out into whether it's addiction or addiction to your iPhone. So like, address the youth, make some youth centers, make some senior centers. There's plenty of vacant storefronts throughout Portland. And I think, you know, if the city could buy back some of these distressed properties and then make those into hubs of community, we would have a more healthy city.
Nice. So the relationship between the city of Portland and Multnomah County has been kind of rocky recently, especially around the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Mm-hmm. How would you approach collaborating with the county if you're elected mayor?
Well, I think relationships are really important. So I would do everything in my power to schedule time to make sure that those relationships are as healthy as can be. But I do see like a systemic issue here that I think could be solved if we addressed things like houselessness from the top down, from the state level down. Then we wouldn't have the squabble city versus county if we had like a unified system where housing resources, addiction help resources, health care was coordinated at the state level. I think we'd have much better results. And so I'm trying to figure out if that, in what ways that would be more possible.
Okay. So are there any recent like city council actions that you think the current commission got wrong?
Well, I'm not a fan of villainizing houselessness or property or poverty, and it really disturbs me that a tent has become a symbol of like the ultimate failing of a city. Like, a tent is not a gun. A tent is not a weapon. So when city council passed this ordinance to further criminalize housing and poverty, I think they got that wrong. And I know that a lot of Portlanders are clamoring for that, and that's like the ascendancy of the Gonzalez campaign. But I do not think that that's a solution. I think that only destabilizes people further. And yeah, I think we got it wrong.
And can only push them into it deeper.
Right.
So we actually have a caller question. Charles says he lived in Portland since the 80s, and he wants to know, how would you insulate yourself from corruption in Portland?
Thank you, Charles. How would I insulate myself from corruption? Very good question. You know, I've always put integrity and honesty first. Those are, I can't sleep at night without thinking what is the most basic truth. I don't think that I can be bought. I haven't seen an instance yet where somebody can sway me with money or power. That is something that strippers become very accustomed to. Nobody says no to a guy with a lot of money like a stripper. So I think the vote, yeah, maybe that's my answer right there. I've never seen it done. People swaying me with power or influence or money. I stand for truth, integrity, beauty, community, and I will till the end.
So going back to the question before this, so the homeless camping ban, what do you think Portland should be doing instead?
We need wraparound services. We need abundant housing. We need those service providers. So that's a huge task, and it's not going to happen overnight. But so Carmen Rubio spoke very eloquently to this, that 10 years ago, we had a very difficult houseless problem, but we had much more service providers and weren't spending as much money. We had a caseworker for every individual who could steer them through the system. We don't have that right now. And I do believe that part of that is the cost of living. If it's really expensive for a policeman to live here or a teacher to live here, it's even more so for a peer support worker or a therapist or, you know, an entry level a nurse practitioner. We need cheaper housing for all those people, and then incentives to help them get through school, to help them find housing, because those are key players here. And if we just build housing, it's not going to be successful, because a lot of these people require services to steer them on a path to success.
In the past, there's been millions and millions of dollars like not spent by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, and that's run by the county. How would you, as mayor of the city of Portland, work around that and try and get them to actually like focus on what the money needs to be spent on, getting people housed, keeping people housed?
Yeah, I mean, that is real frustrating when you see how I'm proud of Portland. They continually vote so much money to help their neighbors, and then it doesn't reach them. I feel like we have like a plumbing problem where the pipe goes into the top of this system, and it should go into the bottom. It should be funding the people first, and then that money trickles up to the bureaucrats. But I see the bureaucrats kind of doing a new study or, you know, hiring a new group of people that are going to somehow be experts on this. And it's very frustrating. And I don't know how the city, what levers, the city has to to really sway the county other than pulling our money out of the Joint Office of Housing Services. And I don't think that's a move that we should make either. So yeah, I'm still listening. I'm still waiting to hear everybody's ideas because it's not working.
So a large aspect of this that like is not really explored, and there was a report back in 2019 that like 52% of arrests were of homeless, unwanted individuals. Just recently, Portland City Council finally passed the Police Accountability Commission after a lot of back and forth, and the current council watered down the things that the voter commission put forth. Have you followed this whole process? What do you think about the situation?
I have followed the process, and it's very heartbreaking, honestly. We passed that law. Again, I was proud of Portland voters. It was in 2020, so they say it was a very different time then. Black Lives Matter and George Floyd. But Portlanders have needed police oversight for a long time. The Department of Justice has been overseeing our police force for over a decade, I believe. And so this is kind of a cultural problem that preceded the pandemic. And so we have all these people make this, 385-page document that Portlanders commissioned. And then to see the city council eviscerate it, I thought that was undemocratic, unconscionable. I know that there are very powerful interests on the police union, and that it is difficult to pass everything, but to see how much they eviscerated it was very upsetting to me.
So what do you think can be done if you're voted in as mayor to try and address that situation? Like, what kind of power do you think you'd be able to push onto the situation to actually influence some change and maybe get it back to where voters voted it?
For sure. The new mayor's role is more of a bully pulpit. The mayor will not be legislating or heading up any bureaus, but they will be hiring the police chief. So I think our new council, our incoming council, will be more progressive. And I hope we have a more progressive mayor to work with them instead of against them. So that makes me hopeful. Also, the mayor will hire the police chief. So what do we want in a police chief? As part of my tasks today, I wanted to email Chief Day and just sit down with him. Like I said, strippers listen, connect, and inspire. And I have already met with two cops just to hear their opinions on what could be changed as far as they saw it in the culture of the PPD. So to hire a police chief who is more culturally in line with what I have heard Portlanders wanting, that would be a priority.
Cool. Okay, thank you. So for listeners at home, you're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Ilya. Today we're speaking with the candidate for mayor, Liv Ostes. And then join the conversation by calling in your questions to the air room at 503-231-8187 or by messaging us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. We will be right back after a short break.
Thank you.
Hello, folks, and welcome back. Okay, so support for Running on Air comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland website, lwvpdx.org. The League has videos of candidate interviews and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions and explanations of ballot measures. That's lwvpdx.org. So, real quick, you're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I have with me candidate for mayor, Liv Ustes. I hope I'm getting that correct.
Close enough. Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Okay. Ustes. So we've already had a great conversation here, and I just really want to jump into something that, like, you mentioned a little while ago about, like, the rampant unaffordability and stuff like that here in Portland. I myself am part of, like, a low-income artist community, Milepost 5. There's very few of us, like, remaining in this city. What do you think as mayor can be done to, like, mitigate the rampant unaffordability, and it's pushing out, like, so many artists and creatives in this city that used to be the heart of Portland?
Yeah, agreed about that being the heart. I take inspiration from what Bernie Sanders did in Vermont in the 80s. The 80s was a very different time, but when there was distressed properties, the city bought the land and the property back. And then the city had more control over what they could charge. They could charge, you know, exactly 30% of your income. Like, if you made $0, your rent was zero. If you made $10, your rent was $3. So that's an idea. When I see all these vacant buildings downtown, I say, how does the city acquire those so that we have the power to control some of these prices? I love Milepost 5 as a model. I know it's had issues over the years, but in theory, like, artists love to live together and cross-pollinate and co-create and inspire each other. I mean, humans in general are bees, and I think density is the wave of the future, and that we do better when we live in close proximity with each other. And in diversity, you know, income diversity, racial diversity, age diversity, I think that those are things we should strive for in community, because we all learn best from each other and from the other. So I don't think these are pie in the sky ideas, especially when I see all the distressed properties downtown and throughout Portland. And like Milepost 5, again, a great example where in every neighborhood there should be this artist hive as an acupuncture point where new ideas happen, where it's a community hub where different ages, different genders, different races can cross-pollinate and come into a generative space together. Genius idea.
Nice. Okay, real quick, we have another question from listener. Emmy says, we've seen a historic rise in firearm homicides in Portland. One solution could be fully funding community violence intervention groups. What do you think about that situation, and like how we can mitigate?
Thank you, Emmy. Could you repeat what the one solution was, what she said?
One solution could be fully funded community violence intervention programs.
Yes, yes. Well,
or groups.
Right. Well, and I think that's absolutely a wonderful idea, and also an idea of places to go for our youth. I see such violence on 122nd. I don't live far from there, and it doesn't get nearly as much attention. Like, all the attention is about these houseless people downtown in their tents when people are killing each other every night on 122nd. And that's a very dense neighborhood, and those people need to feel safe and deserve to feel safe. But there aren't a lot of places to go and do other things, to be creative, to go bowling, to, I don't know, a laundromat used to be a place of community. Let's make sure that our communities have centers where we gather, but yes, also funding adequately, abundantly anti-gun violence, anti-violence groups.
You keep saying one specific word, and I'm catching on to it, and it's community. And what is your opinion on, like, the sense of community here in Portland? Has it diminished since, like, the pandemic? Is it building up again? What can be done as mayors, council members, to be able to try and address building up more community if needed?
That's a great question. I mean, my whole life in Portland has been like different communities intersecting, whether it's writing or music. And honestly, the lowest points in my life when I had breast cancer in 2008, and then when I became a mother by myself in 2015, like my community expanded exponentially. So I hate to say that it was a crisis that reminded me of the power of Portland community, but it did. Like there's many communities here just waiting to be formed, I'm sure. Or maybe you're in community and you don't even realize it, but if you had a health crisis, Portland does community really well. I can attest to that. And maybe that's why I just keep singing its praises, because I do believe that's the way forward. I was a student of cultural anthropology at Williams College, and I lived abroad in Tanzania, East Africa, and Bali, Indonesia, and I do see communities as being just how humans thrive the most. And I feel sorry for people. The richer people get, seems like the more isolated they get and the sicker they get. And I'm like, I don't want that. Let's do something together.
So one thing I've noticed recently too is that there's like a lot of gentrification going on here in Portland. Historically, back in 2010, over in North Portland, and that's like what's pushed a lot of that community over towards the numbers. Mm-hmm. 122nd and beyond, 82nd. Mm-hmm. Like, as mayor, what kind of like anything really can you put out forward to try and mitigate some of that? Because there are programs like Albina Vision Trust and stuff that are trying to actually work to address this.
Right. Well, making sure that there's, we could fund down payment initiatives to help people buy their homes, make community banking is something that Bim Ditson, who ran for mayor a couple terms ago, was a real advocate of, and Sarah Iannarone subsequently. I think that's a very interesting way to keep our money in our communities and help lower income people to purchase their houses. Obviously, that's a key thing for people being able to stay in their communities is to own the home so that they're not displaced. But my gosh, the wheels of capitalism are really crunching down on us all right now. I mean, I get calls every day, like people wanting to buy my house, people in who knows where. And it's hard to hang on. So let's make sure that Portlanders own the ground beneath them, whether that's the city buying distressed buildings back or people in Albina buying their neighborhood back. We need to make sure that communities stay healthy. And the first step is to make sure that they are able to stay on that land where they are in community.
And continuing with this, where do you find community in Portland?
Oh my God, everywhere. I mean, it's such a gift. So as a kid, I was a preacher's kid, and I moved every 2 years. So it's really unusual for me to be in one town for 28 years. And like I said, the music community, we used to all live kind of downtown around the Satyricon. We were very in close proximity. We're far flung now, but I still feel in community there. My writing community, my parenting community, and then most recently, my new community of all these passionate civil servants who are running for office, and they have been so welcoming to me. We're just sharing ideas and sharing resources and trying our hardest to make sure that Portland grows, thrives, remains the Portland that we know and love. And that community is really awesome, and I'm excited to see Portland change civically in the next year, because the people running are awesome.
So are there any like common misconceptions you're encountering in this campaign, like when it comes to really just about anything?
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, the fact that I'm a stripper, people often think that I'm doing this either for attention or that it's a big joke. That's not true at all. And I'm accustomed to that misconception. People always underestimate sex workers, and they should not. But, you know, it does get old, and I think that a lot of people are missing a key part of the conversation. So that's a misconception. I guess I could just leave it there unless you want to go further.
No, that's great. Thank you. So going back to like our first set of questions, like what will your position be on continued fossil fuel infrastructure negotiations here in Portland? Because they're rather aggressive. And literally, it's been mayoral candidates and the mayor that have curtailed to zenith in a lot of the situation. What would your position be?
I mean, my position is earth first all the way. I understand that the wheels of commerce are large and we all rely on them, but we're at a turning point where we either change or we die. That's my perspective. But the mayor also necessarily has to listen to 500,000 Portlanders. So I'd keep an ear out for her. But what was the guy Charles's question? How would I not be swayed or bought? Like, the earth first. Walt Curtis, who was a host here for many years, his dream was to see the salmon come back up the Willamette and up the Columbia. Like, that's, I share that dream. I am running because Mama Earth needs us really bad. I feel like I'm putting on my buffalo alter ego and just running downtown to kick up the soils for new things to grow. I am done hearing about how the primacy of fossil fuels is more important than our children's lives, our hope for the future. I get it, that's going to be a transition, but it's the time is now.
Speaking on that, like, corruption part that you're talking about, what is your take on the Zenith Oil deal being negotiated out of the public eye by, like, Commissioner Carmen Rubio and then also Dan Ryan? It basically allows Zenith to continue their operations for the next 5 years.
Yeah, why this lack of transparency? It's really infuriating. I was in a meeting earlier today with Carmen Rubio for the Mercury endorsement, and she kind of said that she wasn't aware of all the moving parts when she made those agreements and that things, so clearly being a public servant, there's a lot you're stepping into when you enter the fray, stuff that is already going on, but I think it takes a lot of bravery to say, no, stop. But isn't that what most of us are saying? Don't our voices matter more than these big, colossal interests? Doesn't the health of our watershed and our river and our air and our children matter more than what's the status quo?
So if voted mayor, how do you want people to hold you accountable?
Interesting question. How do I want people to hold me accountable? I want there to be a very transparent leader. So every deal, I mean, Portlanders are pretty good at oversight. They are reading up. They do vote. So how would they hold me to transparency? I'm a writer. I would write a weekly update and make sure that every data point was there. I would want to meet in person with, you know, as many people as I possibly could. The new mayor, again, they're relieved of these bureau duties. They're relieved of legislation. So can the mayor be the person who is just advocating for truth, beauty, transparency, and making sure this city is representative of the people and not the special interests? Yeah, that's a tricky question. I'll be thinking about that.
Okay, so if you're listening at home, you're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Ilya. Today we're speaking with the candidate for mayor. I have here with me Liv Ostis. Join the conversation by calling in your questions to the air room at 503-231-8187. That number again is 503-231-8187, or by messaging us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. So the city council followed a zigzag pathway to the Zenith agreement. Will you consider trying to overturn the agreement?
Yeah, I would certainly consider it. My job would be to listen to Portlanders, individual voices, and to honor and respect what their desire is. And if that was overturning the Zenith, then absolutely I would do whatever was in my power. And I mean, that is where my personal heart lies. But again, it's not just about me, it's about the whole city. So I would listen and then act.
Okay, so what do you think about the plans to develop a Live Nation music venue just north of the Hawthorne Bridge?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. we know that the Department of Justice is investigating Live Nation, and they're trying to break up the monopoly that they have with Ticketmaster. It's not like a seemly entity to be getting into bed with. That said, Prosper Portland has leased this land to local developers and who have done a lot for Portland. Like, that's, they're going to be owning the land. Live Nation has absolutely a history of eviscerating local music scenes, of closing venues close in their wake. If they're not doing something actively, it's very suspicious how it keeps happening in every city. In Portland, we have such a precious music scene, and we should do everything to protect it. Mike Quinn with Monkey, they're building a mid-sized venue at Lloyd Center. I think that's plenty. Let's focus all of our energy on that. Bands can play there, mid-sized bands, and...
I mean, we got Moda Center, we've got Roseland Theater, we have a whole bunch of different venues. And yeah, maybe speak a little bit more to like what you've seen Live Nation do to other music venues.
Well, the data's there that those venues kind of can't compete. So Live Nation is a huge conglomerate, and so they can... their margins are bigger. Well, so they don't need to. Sorry, I get a little over passionate about Live Nation and apparently lose my way. You know, that big shiny building that looks like a Tesla, like right there in front of Bunk Bar where I work, and I look out at it every day. It's like, that seems like a big energy center, like it would bring energy to the Central East Side. I get it. I get what they're thinking, but this is not the right organization to do that. I get that they're ready to pour in a bunch of money into the Portland music scene, but we have not seen them play nicely across the country. There's plenty of examples where they, smaller venues just can't compete with a big conglomerate. Like, that makes sense to everyone, right? And so we have like Mississippi Studios, that Doug Fir's making a new venue down there in the Central East Side. We have so many wonderful venues, and they're all hanging on by a thread after COVID. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. We can do something else with that property. It's a cherry property. The train is an issue, but I work at Bunk Bar, and again, there's a venue that we had music there, and we had great shows there. I've seen some of the best shows in my life at Bunk Bar, and that's plenty down there. Let's make a, I don't know, how about some artist housing across the street? That would be really cool.
That actually can lead right into this next question. What will it mean to the artists? Because we're talking about the venues and how they're going to be impacted, but like, what about the artists in Portland? How will they be impacted if Live Nation's venue is actually built?
Right. Well, what I've read is that Live Nation pays less than market rates, so people are scrambling over fewer and fewer resources. I mean, the artists are already getting by on next to nothing, and they don't always use local openers, so that's problematic. There's tons of data at Music Portland to sift through if you're still on the fence about it, but it. Live Nation is not something we want in Portland, but every other city in America has it. Certainly, it must not be that bad. It is.
Yeah, Portland kind of gets this reputation of being a big city, and we're still like a little city, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, which of your endorsements are you most proud of?
Which of my endorsements? Oh, great question. All right. So today I worked at Mary's Club, and this person that I used to do cabaret shows with back in the 90s came in. This person is named Ron, but he goes by Rhonda Lee. He occasionally cross-dresses, and he's deaf and blind now. He's in his late 70s, and he hand wrote out an endorsement for me, and I took his picture. That was really meaningful. My neighbor, Sophia, she's a college student. She wrote me a beautiful endorsement. I just got a campaign donation from Gus Van Sant that meant the world to me. That's a great endorsement. Chelsea Kane, the writer, hosted a bunch of Portland like top tier artists at her beautiful loft, and like that was a huge endorsement. I haven't really sought many of the more traditional endorsements, partly because it's so time consuming and I'm a single mom and I'm working and I'm trying to keep a roof over our heads, and I don't have a person on my campaign that can devote the requisite time to it, but also because I am such an unconventional candidate that I didn't feel I was going to get adequate consideration. So I, two reasons, but I, those are my endorsements when it comes from individual Portlanders and from the heart. Those are what I post on my website. And
from community members.
Community members, yeah. Exactly, community members.
Okay, so back to the Zenith Oil for, I know I'm probably beating this to death, but a lot of the questions were centered around that. The Portland auditor this year reported that Zenith Oil actually violated city regulations around lobbying. What specific steps will you take to ensure that fossil fuel corporations operating in Portland will comply with city laws while doing business here?
Well, first of all, I love that your listeners are asking so many questions about this, because it is, I think, should be the number one, one of the number one issues, because it has to deal with our environmental health long term. I would use every lever at my disposal to make sure, obviously, that every entity and person complied with the law, but most especially these big fossil fuel conglomerates that just are accustomed to skirting public will. Like, how did they get away with that? I don't know. I'll look into that more, why that was allowed or how that was allowed, because certainly Portlanders won't stand for that. So why did our current administration let that happen?
Yeah. Okay, so we're going into this whole new system of voting, ranked choice voting. How do you think ranked choice voting has impacted this race for you, for other candidates, just the race overall?
It's really cool. I'm proud of Portland for voting in this change as well. It's been a collaborative campaign. By all accounts, the city council candidates are collaborating. It's not, you know, him versus me. We mayoral candidates too. It's just been very nice and sharing wisdom, time, resources. I've just been really appreciative of that, and I credit that to ranked choice, where it's not this binary. I'm really hopeful, and also I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen. Come, it's not going to even be November 5th. You know, we won't get results for another who knows how long as they count this. But any polling you've seen is probably inaccurate, because we can't quite figure out what voters, how they're going to be ranked. I mean, so if you wanted me first, who are you going to vote second? It could be anybody. I've seen Renee's Gonzalez's voters be like, well, I'm voting for the stripper second because that's a funny joke. Well, that could actually, who knows, put me up there.
Okay. So in your opinion, is there something that Portland government is spending too much time and attention on currently? That's distracting from bigger issues.
Yeah. Well, I must say that I am frustrated how much time and attention is talking about the houseless and addiction, because that, while that is super important and affecting all of us, like the gun violence on 122nd gets short shrift. The wonderful things that still go on here are barely recognized. We still have a lot of artists doing amazing things and we don't hear about them. Our wonderful small businesses. I think we could have a more optimistic message, and yes, we need to house our people and make sure they're healthy, but also these things.
So this is kind of more of a personal question from a project I'm working on. I just got done wrapping on a documentary series that I entitled Is Portland Dying? It's exploring all this rhetoric, and are you seeing like the homelessness, the drug addiction, and all that stuff being used as a scapegoat to say why Portland's dying? Is Portland dying in your opinion? Is it thriving? What could be done?
I mean, Portland's neighborhoods are still thriving. Portland's downtown core, which, you know, we need that engine, economic engine, to thrive. It is dying. And I've talked to people in urban planning who say cities typically are on a 20-year cycle, and there's a 20-year cycle of boom and then a 20-year cycle of bust, and that we've entered that. And well, I hate to think that. I guess that is a thing in urban planning. That said, I firmly believe that we can bring back our downtown just by letting energy back into there, like housing, artist studios. People should be in our downtown. We shouldn't have these empty buildings. The houseless need hope more than anyone. I often say that Portland has a crisis of hopelessness more than crisis of houselessness. People need hope, and artists bring hope. Density, people living together, communities bring hope. And we're kind of starving that out of downtown by not rehabbing those buildings and making them functional living spaces or performance spaces or creative spaces.
So we've covered a lot. We only have a few more minutes left on here. Just real quick, is there anything you'd want to say about like why our listeners should vote for you as mayor, and anything maybe we haven't even touched on here yet?
Big question. let's see. I like Portland has a big decision coming up, and you know, it's a new form of government. The mayor's role is going to be very different, and I truly believe it's time for a mayor who is a visionary. Somebody said in a comment, like, "Oh, she needs more than a vision board to be the mayor," and I was like, "I have more than a vision board, but also." The mayor needs to be a visionary and shine light in a time of darkness and be our biggest champion and lead us forward and do the hard work of reaching community members and bringing them together. Like, that's the crisis of our time. We're so divided nationally, and I think a visionary mayor, a stripper mayor, can do these things.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Okay, so folks, you've been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with Liv Ostis, who is running for mayor. You can find all of the episodes of Running on Air on KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to all the KBOO volunteers who helped make this happen. Our engineer is Althea Billings, and our producer is also Althea Billings. And our editor is Eric Luschner. Tune in for the next episode of Running on Air. It will be with candidates from District 1, 7 p.m. on Monday, September 23rd. I've been your host, Corey Ilya. Thanks for listening.
Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local, community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today